Our scripture this morning is Luke 1, 39 to 56. At that time, Mary got ready and hurried to a town in the hill country of Judea, where she entered Zechariah's home and greeted Elizabeth. When Elizabeth heard Mary's greeting, the baby leaped in her womb, and Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Spirit. In a loud voice, she exclaimed, "Blessed are you among women, and blessed is the child you will bear. But why am I so favored that the mother of the Lord should come to me? As soon as the sound of your greeting reached my ears, the baby in my womb leaped for joy. Blessed is she who has believed that the Lord would fulfill his promises to her." And Mary said, "My soul glorifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior, for he has been mindful of the humble state of his servant. From now on, all generations will call me blessed, for the Mighty One has done great things for me. Holy is his name. His mercy extends to those who fear him. From generation to generation, he has performed the mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who are proud in their inmost thoughts. He has brought down rulers from the thrones, but has lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things, but has sent the rich away empty. He has helped his servant Israel, remembering to be merciful to Abraham and his descendants forever, just as he promised our ancestors." So Mary stayed with Elizabeth for about 3 months and then returned home.
Two weeks ago, I invited you into the cold, dark depths of me and Shanda's most troubling unanswered prayer. The prayers we've prayed for her brother Landon to be able to walk and talk and be himself again. And bless your hearts, you went to that cold, dark place with us. I know this in part because so many of you lovingly reminded me after the service that you were already there. You told me about a spontaneous prayer prayed for Landon in this very room. And you told me about following the Hostetler's blog on Caring Bridge. And when I think back on those days, I can tell you that it made a difference to us. I can tell you that in the aftermath of an accident like that, you simply want the whole world to stop. That in those moments, it can feel deeply cruel that the rest of the world is just coolly going about its business while your world has collapsed. I can tell you that in moments like those, you look out a hospital window, you see a stranger on a cell phone just walking to work, and you think, "You jerk. How dare you go on with your life when I'm going through this?" And that's just when you're watching your language. All of which, of course, is a manifestation of what's really, really bothering you. My God, if you really care, how can you allow the world to go on in the midst of this? But then, sometimes you hear about someone you've never met in, say, Colorado, or someone you've never met in Northern Canada, or a whole bunch of people you've never met in Albany, Oregon, praying for you and reading your blog updates, and you realize that a worldwide swath of people, God's people, have stopped allowing their world to just turn and go on. And even though it's so far from enough to answer all of your prayer, it may be enough to keep you asking those scowling neurologists your true questions that day, and calling healthcare facility after health facility to find the one that might truly, actually believe that there is hope for your brother. It might not fix everything, but it might get you through another day. So, today, as we keep talking about unanswered prayers on our journey towards Christmas, I want us to linger on a sentence in our story that comes right after the angel Gabriel departs from Mary. It's a verse I'm not sure we commonly linger on as we get ready for Christmas. It's this: "In those days, Mary set out and went with haste to Judean town in the hill country, where she entered the house of Zechariah and greeted Elizabeth. Or because both the NRSV and NIV versions make this dynamic verse extra stuffy, here's how Eugene Peterson translates it in the Message. Mary didn't waste a minute. She got up and traveled to a town in Judah in the hill country straight to Zechariah's house and greeted Elizabeth. It's this moment of togetherness, this moment of sister care, this moment of Mary choosing to be with Elizabeth and Elizabeth choosing to be with Mary in the midst of Mary's marital confusion and social embarrassment and waiting to know what, well, you know, giving birth to the Son of God might feel like and mean for the rest of her life that we're going to spend some time on today. Because as we continue meditating on our unanswered prayers, as we think about waiting for Jesus at Christmas, I want to make sure we notice that God's people do not have to wait alone. That doesn't mean that they didn't, and we won't, feel very, very alone sometimes. But it means that each of us can give the gift of sitting with someone in deep, dark pain of their unanswered prayer. If you've ever experienced pain, and we all have, I hope you've experienced the incredible blessing of having someone sit with you in that pain. And today, I hope that meditating on that experience will help to give you a fuller experience of this moment in God's story. And whether you've had the blessing of having someone sit with you in pain or whether you're still waiting for that to happen, I hope that this moment in God's story can give you hope that it can happen. And for all of us who are caregivers, from caregivers in the making to caregivers already running at maximum capacity, I hope that this moment in God's story will leave you feeling a little more recognized and a little more inspired. Last week, we saw Elizabeth receive the answer to her lifelong prayer, and we saw Mary receive the answer to her people's 500-year-old prayer. We noticed that both answers to prayer were initially terrifying, and while Mary responds to this terror with a strength that should stop us in our tracks, saying, "Here am I, the servant of the Lord, let it be with me according to your word," to think her terror and anxiety ended with that would be to strip her of her humanity. Immediately after saying those words, Mary makes haste to see her relative Elizabeth. And when she gets there, she throws down her bags in the guest room, plops down at Elizabeth's kitchen table, and doesn't leave for 3 months. Well, Luke only gives us the make haste and the 3 months part, but the Bible is rarely a book of unnecessary adjectives and details. So when it does give us details like makes haste and stayed for 3 months, we do well to recognize those details are there to tell us something significant. So why the haste? Why the long stay? Well, let's see. Might it be the insecurity of knowing that she'll need to explain all of this to her fiancé? Oh, and the fear of what it will be like to be pregnant before she's married in a society that has stoned people for such things? Oh, and the sheer terror, of course, of the most mind-blowing kind of pregnancy that any of us could ever imagine. The recognition that even if Joseph comes around and the men of the village choose not to label her a harlot, to put it gently, and the pregnancy and birth are problem-free, nothing in her life will ever be the same after this. Which is what our most terrifying moments do to us, don't they? I remember this realization after Landon's accident. At that point, we still expected that Landon's only hurdle was his coma. We thought he'd simply snap awake one morning and fully, completely be back. And even then, I remember telling a colleague, you know, no matter what happens here, nothing will ever be the same for our family again. Our lives will always be divided by before this and after this. Surely, giving birth to the Son of God is a before and after this moment divider of its own. And rather than give you 3 points at the end of this sermon, I'm going to pause to give you a couple of them right here. First, while Mary's choice to go to Elizabeth is a really good one, it's Elizabeth that we should really pause to aspire to be here. In our hardest moments, we may not always be able to make haste to anywhere or anyone or anything. we might sooner spend 3 months in bed than 3 months asking for help. And although Elizabeth doesn't physically have to go to Mary, the thing we should notice here is that as soon as Mary arrives, Elizabeth makes her own kind of haste to meet Mary emotionally. She makes haste to sit and wait in the hard space that Mary is waiting in. As soon as Elizabeth heard Mary's greeting, Luke tells us she gushes with, "Bless you, and bless this pregnancy, and I'm so glad you are here right now, and these babies of ours are connected. I know it. The baby in me is doing somersaults inside me, just knowing that you and your baby are here." And again, blessings on you for accepting this big thing. Now, for some of us, this might be a bit much of a gratuitous blessing talk when we're anxious. For instance, if Shanda's having a rough day, I wouldn't choose those particular words. Rough day at work, honey? Well, blessings, blessings, blessings. It's not everyone's cup of comfort tea. But as we'll soon see, Mary's incredible response to this shows that Elizabeth must have known her Mary very well. Mary's response, which we'll explore a little later here, is the response of one who has felt solidarity on the deepest level. The sentence that steals the show is the one about Elizabeth's baby immediately leaping in the womb as soon as Mary and her baby walk in. This isn't just cute. This is a statement of solidarity. "We are in this together," Elizabeth tells her. And at face value, we think, yeah, they're both pregnant. They're related. They're in it together. But Elizabeth's pregnancy could be quite different if she wanted to think about it that way. Hers signals the end of her personal anguish of waiting for a baby. Mary's is the beginning of a crisis, a deeply blessed crisis, but a blessing that is, as we've seen, going to require all the strength even the strongest of us could ever muster. So when we notice Elizabeth meeting Mary in her incredibly lonely, difficult position, let's remember, Elizabeth had finally, after an entire lifetime of her own prayer, gotten out of that headspace. Elizabeth, finally enjoying her ecstatic answer to prayer pregnancy, could have resented immediately having to be dragged back down into someone else's pregnancy-related crisis. But Elizabeth instead chooses to use her experience of unanswered prayer to relate to Mary in a way that no one else could have. Mary may have made haste to Elizabeth because she was her favorite cousin, but she also almost certainly made haste to Elizabeth because no one understood pregnancy-related crises and loneliness and anxiety like Elizabeth did. Which is a word of challenge and comfort to all of us. In the midst of pain, trauma, and loneliness, we receive a gift that we don't often realize we've received until later. It's the gift of knowing how to choose our words, when to choose no words at all, when and where to place a comforting hand on a shoulder, offer a hug, when to ask to pray with someone and when to just pray fervently for them later, and just generally being better at knowing what it means to sit with someone who is also waiting for Jesus. Of course, we never know exactly what to say or do, but if you've lived through trauma, you've likely had a moment where you suddenly had a sense of what someone else needed in a way that you never would have had it before. This may not seem like much of a gift compared to what you had to go through to get that gift, but it's there. Elizabeth found the strength to use it, and we can do incredible things for others when we find such strength too. Speaking of incredible things, I've already briefly mentioned that Elizabeth's response to Mary triggers an incredible response from Mary. The speech that Mary gives immediately after Elizabeth's words of comfort and blessing in solidarity are astounding. The speech is so incredible that it gets a really cool name, the Magnificat. And what makes this Magnificat so magnificent? We could spend our entire Advent on that alone. There's books that do that. But for now, I'll just say this. Mary's Magnificat is one of the Bible's premier outpourings of social justice and equality, or at least a statement of those. I am lowly, but God has raised me to the highest of positions, Mary begins. And let this be a lesson to everyone, she continues. God is a God who scatters the proud-hearted, tears the powerful from their thrones to lift up the lowly, fills up the hungry, and sends the rich away empty-handed. That God is the God of Israel, she continues, the God of the people that have descended from Abraham, the God who does that. For those of you who remember me talking last month about a strange, small song of peace playing quietly through some of Israel's more arrogant moments, this is Mary, the unexpected soloist stepping out of the choir and into the spotlight and blowing the roof off the concert hall with that song, that formerly strange, small song of equality and peace. Jesus is coming, friends, and Mary knows what that means. The strange, small song is about to get even stronger. So, let's notice the order of things here briefly. Elizabeth has provided Mary with solidarity when she needs it most, and Mary, in turn, has gone from accepting one-to-one solidarity with Elizabeth to proclaiming God's solidarity for everyone who needs it. So to make a last point, let's notice that when we stand in solidarity with someone who is anxious, broken, or grieving, we are joining in what God is doing in the world. More than that, we are allowing ourselves to be trained to speak up for others and live for others in ways that we may never have fathomed before. If you're like me, the injustices of this world can just feel too overwhelming to tackle sometimes. If that's the case for you, just focus on one place where you can wait with someone for Jesus. Then see what happens next. You might be surprised at what you can do. All of this, of course, is far easier to see if Elizabeth isn't just a story to you, if you've seen an Elizabeth in your own life. So here briefly is where I've seen some Elizabeths. After Landon's accident, a particularly cruel dynamic of it all was that there were very few people who had lived with the severity of brain injury that he'd suffered. Doctors seem worried to give us any hope or tell us much of anything, because it seemed like there really wasn't much of anything for them to go on. It also became quickly, painfully clear that the brain injury support groups would have no idea what to do with us. These were people who were rightfully concerned about, say, their teen's latest concussion. And to be honest, that's a big deal, but it was hard for us to feel solidarity in that space, where our pain felt raw in a different way. But then, somehow, out of nowhere, these very, very few families with children with severe traumatic brain injuries must have started to hear about us. And soon we found ourselves in the midst of this tiny, otherwise invisible support network that knew our pain. That group became our family's lifeline. And as with Mary's Magnificat, that group inspired passions that would go on to extend to other parts of creation. I saw this, for instance, in Shanda's master's thesis, which became a qualitative research project conducted with those same families who'd known our pain. And then she shared their precious insights of how those families found strength in the face of severe traumatic brain injury. I'm telling you, these were things we couldn't find in any books when we were living through it. And then I saw this continue to grow as Shanda, who'd never seemed particularly interested in social work in a medical setting, went on to work in a long-term care facility for a few years. And then three of Shanda's sisters, one of whom was studying something else, after this experience became nurses. And I know that all of these inspired, incredible sisters have been and are Elizabeths in waiting in every hospital or setting they work in. They have bottled some of the best of what their support network gave them, and they hold some of the most precious medicine any hospital could ever provide. So, Who in your life might you be feeling a nudge to make haste to this week? Who needs your solidarity today? Who might have an unanswered prayer that your own unanswered prayer has prepared you for like no one else? Where might you choose to wait with someone else for Jesus? Where could you be someone's Elizabeth?